Happy Friday. First regular season Friday that we've got. It's April 8th right now. I'm Adam Azer with Al Melchior and Scott White. Today, we're going to compare players rest of season. Who would you rather have, Gene Segura or Trevor Story or Ian Desmond? You know, stuff like that. Fun stuff with some of the trending players right now. We'll look at the most added list and help you set your lineup for week two. We will help people set their lineup for week two, right?
I'd like to do that.
Yeah, man, we can go through two-star pitchers, I think.
Okay, that's important stuff. That works for me. How are you guys? Good morning. Hello.
All's good. All's good here.
Cool. Scott?
Yeah, yes? I'm good too. I'm good.
Good. Everyone's good. Everyone's happy. Everyone got their favorite cereal.
Happy and healthy.
Perfect.
I did not have my Rizzos this morning.
Ooh, Kyle Schwarber is going to need some Rizzos. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about Schwarber and some other injuries. We're going to talk about the Rangers bullpen, sum it up for you, what happened last night. We will compare players rest of season, talk about the Thursday standouts. Wasn't quite as compelling as the Wednesday standouts, but the Dodgers are hitting the ball really well. So more on that. And, you know, what we usually do, plus your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Kyle Schwarber sprained his ankle. He collided with Dexter Fowler on Babe Ruth, a.k.a. Gene Segura's inside-the-park home run, which was his second home run of the game. anyway, Schwarber's x-rays were negative. He will have an MRI today. So, here's what we know. Tommy La Stella and Jorge Soler will replace Schwarber. Chris Bryant may play some outfield as well. Javier Baez is interesting. He's on the DL. Will not be ready to return on Monday. He had a slight setback with his thumb. But, Scott, break it down. What's your take on left field now for the Cubs?
Well, I think it may end up being good news for Jorge Soler. I mean, we don't know Schwarber's going on the DL. It seems like he probably will. I mean, he couldn't walk off the field last night. So that's bad. I'm not ruling out yet, even though x-rays were negative, I'm not ruling out it being a long-term injury. Like you said, he's having the MRI today. It seems likely that in his knee or ankle or elsewhere, there could be some ligament damage. I actually thought, because I saw it happen live, I was afraid his hip was going to be messed up because the collision was kind of a strange one. It's like their legs collided and nothing else. So he got kind of twisted around there. But I would say Soler is going to be at least a short-term winner here. And at least in five outfielder leagues, he absolutely needs to be owned.
He is 47% owned.
What I worry about with Soler is just not enough playing time, though. Even though it's obviously going to be more playing time than he'd have otherwise. But the Cubs have such flexibility on their roster. You know, we saw Tommy La Stella last night. He's going to be in that mix to get those at bats. So I don't know like what sort of league. I don't think I'd pick
five
up
outfielder. Like I said,
five outfielder. Okay.
I was already owning him in our five out. Like I don't think he's available in any of our five outfielder leagues.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. I don't think he's like suddenly must start or anything. But if there's an opportunity for him to play regularly, I want a part of that because the upside I think is enormous.
Well, what about Javier Baez? I mean, I picked him up in our 16-team league, and I'm stashing him on the DL for now. When he gets activated, I'll have a decision to make. But what do you guys think about Baez's role? He's 30% owned.
I would think he probably plugs into the whatever role La Stella will play right now. So I think it's a similar situation where maybe between Baez and Soler, one of them could get the bulk of the playing time. So really, both of them would be worth stashing if you have the room.
Hypothetical scenario, tell me how realistic. Jorge Soler struggles because, you know, he struggled last year. And then they decide we're going to make Chris Bryant our more or less everyday left fielder and Javier Baez will be an infielder, play some third base most of the time.
I think it's absolutely realistic if, in those same deeper five outfielder leagues, I know I own Javier Baez in a lot. He's kind of my backup to Jorge Soler in terms of who I thought would benefit the most for the Cubs if somebody went down.
Okay. Talented players, take a shot. You know, good stuff. Josh Donaldson, Michael Saunders could return to the lineup today. Michael Brantley will begin a rehab assignment soon. Adam Jones was out with ribcage soreness. He is day-to-day. Lance McCullers is going to begin a rehab assignment Monday. Bob Melvin said that Sean Doolittle is his closer, but he won't be afraid to use Doolittle in the eighth if there are lefties due up. Which
I'm not
Madsen.
Afraid.
Yeah, well, Madsen could get some saves, too.
He already has.
Yes.
He leads the team in saves.
Is he is a, if you own Sean Doolittle, do you have to get Ryan Madsen?
No, I don't think so, because I don't think it's a situation where Madsen overtakes Doolittle. But I just think Madsen now becomes an interesting saves option in a deeper league where saves are really scarce, and maybe picking up a guy who could get 8 to 10 saves just sporadically over the season has some value.
Yeah. Okay. And Eric Hosmer went to a Justin Bieber concert. Very, very disappointing news.
Highly disappointing.
I'm glad I didn't draft Eric Hosmer, because now I'd want to trade him.
You think he and the Biebs are like pals?
So Dane Perry, of course,
backstage passes.
Dane Perry, of course, wrote the story on CBSSports.com. It's a very Dane Perry-like story, and I think Jeremy Guthrie had something to do with this. They asked somebody on the Royals about Bieber or whatever, and he said, well, yeah, we had Guthrie on the team last year. So I think there might be a Guthrie-Bieber connection. Worth
That's
reading.
Less fantasy relevant, though.
Yeah. He's a believer.
Worth
Jeremy Guthrie.
On CBSSports.com. So here's what happened in the Rangers bullpen last night. I was going to, you know, tell you all the lines and tell you, you know, my impression of what happened. But instead, I'm just going to read verbatim from the Star Telegram. Keone Kella tossed a perfect seventh but allowed a single to Trout to start the eighth. Sam Dyson entered and allowed back-to-back infield singles to load the bases. Dyson, though, struck out Cole Calhoun and got Andrelton Simmons to bounce into a 5-4-3 double play. Back for the ninth, Dyson allowed a single and a walk with one out before being replaced by Andrew Faulkner, who got Carlos Perez to ground a third. Faulkner then walked Trout and was replaced by Tolleson, who saw his second pitch one-hop the left field wall. That was Albert Pujols. And I'm done reading now. Albert Pujols singled off Tolleson to end the game, a walk-off. So Tolleson throws two pitches and doesn't get the loss because the run wasn't charged to him, but... Yeah, this is getting interesting now. What do you think about the Rangers bullpen, guys?
So, yeah, it looks like Andrew Faulkner's the closer, huh?
I think Dyson. I think Dyson is the way to go.
I'm leaning that way. I think yesterday I said, Kayla, it's so confusing, but the way that Dyson was used last year and how he's been used so far, it would seem like he'd be probably next in line. But I think it'd just be – I mean, look, first of all, I still think it's Tolleson for the time being.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, if Tolleson – continues to struggle, I think it's just going to be a fluid situation there. It's going to be so hard to pin it down. And just to kind of piggyback this on top of the Oakland analysis, it just seems like there's more and more managers who are open to being flexible with how they use their late inning reliever. So I think it's really, in a way, going to change the way that we need to approach saves, because it's going to add more randomness to something that's already pretty random.
If it continues, but I mean, I feel like enough of headaches like this are going to happen just from not having defined roles, that everybody's going to kind of regress to the status quo as far as using of ninth inning relievers. So it's something to monitor for sure. It's a storyline here early in the season, but I think in the end it's not really going to make that big of a difference.
Alrighty. Dalyer Hinojosa, another bad outing, a non-save situation. One inning, two hits, no runs, no walks, but one strikeout. But two hits in one inning in a non-save situation. And I was reading what Scott wrote on the website on fantasynews.cbsports.com. And Scott, it seems like you think David Hernandez would be the guy to own for the Phillies.
Yeah, I think so. He, his first appearance was pretty rough. And so Hinojosa ended up getting the first save opportunity on Wednesday. It was terrible. The inning before, Hernandez pitched, and it was perfect. He struck out one. And in between that first appearance where he got roughed up in that eighth inning, he had made a mechanical adjustment, which caused him to gain 2 miles per hour on his fastball. I mean, it's a pretty big difference.
That's good, yeah.
From one appearance to the next.
Good
and
adjustment.
You saw the result. And I still think David Hernandez can be a really good reliever, right? We've seen him be a really good reliever. I think it was 2013 with the Diamondbacks. He had closer stuff. And then, the next year wasn't so great, but Tommy John surgery happened right after that. So you wonder how healthy was his elbow then. I think if he's healthy and throwing as hard as he was Wednesday night, he could be as good of a closer as any Phillies, as a team like the Phillies could have, because, you know, obviously they're bad.
And I think we've sort of come full circle to when the news first came out that the Phillies were intending to use Hernandez as a closer. It's like, oh, this guy has some potential. But McCannon has said that he's, you know, using this 5-man committee. And last night, the one who was up in the committee was Jenmar Gomez. So I think this is going to have to play out for a while, maybe, before Hernandez really has the opportunity to seize the role.
Random thought. Do you guys play in any leagues with transaction limits?
No, I don't. I think I have before, but I don't right now, no.
No, me neither.
I'm playing in a league with 7 maximum transactions per week, which I think actually 6, which is fine. But 75 for the season, which if you win the champion, if you play into the championship, I mean, that's 3 per week. That stinks. I am like really hamstrung in that league. It's driving me crazy. If you're going to do a transaction limit, it's got to be more than 75.
Yeah, I don't even really understand the rationale behind a transactions limit. I more and more I'm coming around to the idea of just having a weekly run of waivers, whether it's a league where you set lineups daily or weekly.
Oh, no,
just
no.
A weekly run of waivers.
Oh, gosh, no, Scott, no.
Well, no, I think it creates more competition to get those players. I think it's a situation where the guy who's you know, has the most free time and the most accessibility isn't just going to dominate the waiver wire because he's always the first one there. Everybody knows that on Sunday night, waivers are going to run. You have a week to catch up, and everybody can compete for the best players available instead of the same person getting all of them. I kind of like that, but I prefer that to a transaction limit because, that doesn't sound like many transactions. 3 transactions a week, basically.
Yeah, no, it's not enough. And I think when you see that 75, it seems big at the start of the season, but if you're an avid fantasy player, it's really not that much. And this is a daily lineup league, so that's why there's a transaction limit, which I get, and I think there should be a transaction limit. I think it should be a weekly transaction limit, not season long. But okay, so talking about what you said, Scott, I think if you're going to do weekly waivers, personally, I think it should be weekly fab. That way, everyone really has the same opportunity to get whoever they want.
Yeah, fab's better. I agree.
Maybe we could compromise and say twice a week, because I just think that if I understand not wanting to reward the people that have the most time, but I feel like it's a little too extreme to just do it once a week, because now you're punishing people who are the most dedicated.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, people can fall asleep for a weekly transaction too. It's just they at least have a chance at that point. I just think it evens the playing field in terms of how much time somebody has to devote to this little hobby of ours.
Well, we don't want to de-incentivize devoting time to the hobby. Al Melchior, weigh in, sir.
Devoting time.
Right, exactly. You're not doing that at all.
You're saying you can't do anything for a week.
You have the rest of the week to obsess over results, make trade offers. You're not doing nothing, I can assure you.
No, you are doing nothing. I mean, you're making trade offers. How many trades is a team going to make a year? Like 3 at the most? I mean, like...
All right,
part of baseball is going picking people up.
Obsessing over results.
And some leagues...
You can still put in claims, they're just not going to process.
How many weekly waiver fab leagues do you play in?
0.
Okay, well, maybe it's just an issue of familiarity then, because I don't really have a strong preference for one or the other, to be honest. I think that they each have their benefits, but I do think Scott's argument is right, that I think that it does level the playing field to some degree. And at the same time, it's not, you know, I don't think it's taking anything away from anybody. It's just you do have to be on top of it every week. And if it's, particularly if it's a fab league, I mean, you gotta kind of, you know, put your money where your mouth is. And
when I say level the playing field, I don't think I'm not saying it makes it so worse players can catch up to better players. You still have to know what you're doing.
Right.
It just makes the competition about the things the competition is supposed to be about, as opposed to who can run to the computer first.
Yeah. Scott, or who works in the fantasy sports industry and is on Twitter all day.
Yeah.
Scott
it's
is not a self-interested argument here we're making.
Scott is
sure.
A socialist. That's what I've determined.
No,
from
not at all. Not at all.
Well, I want to talk about, I want to talk about NBA Jam. You remember NBA Jam?
I do, yeah.
Do you remember computer assistants?
I do.
You are putting on computer assistants. Computer assistants. I used to crush my best friend in NBA Jam on Sega Genesis all the time.
That's exactly what I said I'm not doing.
No, you are putting computer assistants on because this would make sure the score remained close.
It's not like a handicap in golf. You're not spotting the other team a certain number of points.
You know what? Let's let our listeners weigh in. Let us know what you think about weekly waivers or weekly fab, or what the best ideas are for transactions. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Now let's start the debates. More debates. Rest of season. Who would you rather have, Starlin Castro or Joe Panik?
I'd rather have Panik, and I think he's proven exactly why in the first few days here, which is funny to say because I know Castro's been even better. But
I don't think anybody's proven anything in three or four days.
Panik's already top 20 points for the week, and you know, I think he does have a home run, but it's not like he's made the headlines Castro's done. He's done it relatively quietly, which is, I think it particularly in points leagues, a very good sign.
And I would rather have Castro for the upside that he showed late last year and continues to show this very, very short time this year. I just think Panik, I feel pretty confident in who he is and it's fine and it's startable, but I'd rather go for the higher upside.
Scott, who would you rather have in Roto or categories?
I'd rather have Panik. I mean, I do think Castro probably has a little more upside for that format where, you know, Panik's peripherals don't set him apart. But I still think, just based on the way the last 2 years have gone, Panik feels like a much surer bet for a 300 batting average than Castro does. And that's supposed to be the best category for both of them.
Okay. Who would you rather have of these three? Jean Segura, Trevor Story, or Ian Desmond? Al.
I'd probably the least trendy of the guys. I'd rather have Desmond.
Wow, I'm surprised.
Yeah,
because I think are you the downer or is Heath?
No, Heath is. I'm actually. I think I'm the top.
Okay. All right.
I'm the the high guy on Desmond.
Okay, fair enough.
It's tough because I like all three of them, but there's in a way there's less risk with Desmond, which is not something I'm used to saying because Desmond's, you know, all about risk with the all the strikeouts he's had the last couple of seasons. But I think that you can count on something between 15 and 20 from Desmond, and you never know, you might get lucky and actually get a decent batting average. I'm not counting on it. Segura and Story, I think they're both they're both riskier coming into the season.
They're definitely riskier, and that's why I currently rank Desmond the highest of the three of them. But that's partly because I think Desmond is the least likely to bottom out and wind up on the waiver wire.
Yeah.
If I own Story or Segura right now, based on the upside I perceive them to have, I would not trade either for Desmond, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, Desmond's not quite. It's not exactly selling high, you know.
Yeah,
Trading him for Corey Seager or something like. Well, Seager's been good. Trading him for Lindor would be another story, right? Well, pun intended.
yes, it would. That would be a slam dunk.
Let's explore Jean Segura a little bit more here, guys. You know, he hit two home runs yesterday. One was a inside the Parker, but he still crushed that ball.
It probably wouldn't have been a home run if there wasn't the outfield collision. I think that's worth noting.
Yeah, and so what I was going to say is, you know, a couple things. First of all, the Diamondbacks have faced pretty bad pitching so far. John Lackey is the best pitcher they've faced. But Segura, you know, he's had some brilliance in his career, but mostly not. What do you think overall about Jean Segura?
Well, I do think he's got a great opportunity for steals, hitting leadoff for the Diamondbacks. And I think the Diamondbacks as a whole will steal a lot of bases this year, even without Pollock, whether it's, you know, you're plugging in Owings or the Brito. I think, you know, all those guys have a good chance at steals. This little power outburst that we have from Segura is pretty unusual. And he's hitting flies early in the season, which is, you know, not his usual MO. And at this point, I have to just view that as a small sample artifact.
Yeah.
I'm a little higher on him, and that's always been the story for me with Segura. I'm having trouble forgetting about that 2013 season again, but I think particularly when you combine this start he's off to with three home runs and a triple with what he did in spring training. I mean, he's, for the 2016 calendar year, he's about halfway to the number of extra base hits he had last year. And he's in his mid-20s. I guess you pointed out he's hitting more fly balls. Like I said, he had that 2013 season where he looked like he was going to be this guy who just racked up extra base hits. And then there was some off-the-field stuff. There was some injury stuff that the Diamondbacks felt like derailed him those last couple of years in Milwaukee. So to kind of piggyback their enthusiasm, I think at a position where there are a few genuinely high upside players, Segura is somebody to get excited about. And I've moved him. Him and Story have both moved up significantly in my rankings. 2/10 and 11th. You know, I'm not going head over heels for them. But like I said, if I own them, I would be wanting to see it play out as opposed to shopping them.
Next up, who would you rather own rest of season, Robinson Cano or Brian Dozier?
I mean, I haven't moved Cano up yet.
I have.
It won't take much. But right now, still Dozier, even though I think Dozier still doesn't have a hit.
Yeah, I moved him just ahead of Dozier, Cano, that is. And the only two second basemen I take over him right now are Altuve and D. Gordon, which means I've done a complete about face from calling Cano a bust entering the season. I will go ahead and say three or four games into the season, I'm not sure how many Seattle's played, that I was wrong about Cano. He has now 11 home runs this calendar year, and he has as many home runs through three games as he had through 3 months last year. So, you know, and that was after that monster second half and double hernia surgery this offseason. I think he's a different guy.
Adam Eaton or Gregory Polanco? You know, people want to know, Al, why is Al so low on Gregory Polanco? So let's start with Adam Eaton or Gregory Polanco. Who would you rather own? Rest of season.
All right, and I'll reinforce the message here. I'd rather have Eaton because of what he did for half a season, the latter half of the season last year. Polanco, I'm still waiting. I mean, he's young. He's got a lot of potential. There were some good things in the minor league resume for Polanco. But I think for him to be, you know, on the level of an Eaton, he's got to hit for quite a bit more power. And I'm not taking for granted that he's going to be a great source of steals either, because he just hasn't been that efficient at doing that.
But Eaton's not a great source of steals.
No, but he's going to compensate. And he's not a great power hitter either, although he made big strides last year.
Yeah.
But I think power-wise, I would expect maybe Eaton to be a little better than Polanco, but it's not a difference maker. But I think based on, again, what they've done up to this point,
yeah,
I think Eaton's going to be much, much better for batting average.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it was a monster second half, but a 405 BABIP or something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, no, and Eaton was on my bus list because
Okay, yeah.
If people were going to expect a repeat of that, they're going to be disappointed, but I still have Eaton as a top 40 outfielder, whereas I have Polanco on the outside of the top 40.
I like Polanco's upside a lot more, and I think, you know, if they just repeat last year, they're close enough. But I think Polanco has more upside, and I think he's between having already walked five times and the exit velocity he's shown on a lot of his hits, I think he's showing signs of capitalizing on that upside.
I made it tough, though, because it's not like Eaton's off to a bad start.
He's off to a very good start.
Both these guys are doing well. All right, and finally, who would you rather have rest of season? I can't believe how easy this is for me. I could be totally wrong, but Julio Teheran or Juan Nicasio, I am really buying Juan Nicasio. What about you guys?
Yeah, this is a fun one. It's a tough one. I'm going to answer Teheran, even though there's like this really strong voice inside that says Nicasio, because it's such a fun story. And,
yeah,
and, you know, and if he pans out, like, you know, it looked like he did in his first start. I mean, you're going to feel really great about having him on your roster and buying in early, but, it's a long season. And I have to go with the guy who's given me more reasons to trust him over the last few years, which is Teheran.
I feel like such a fraud because I know that what I'm supposed to tell people is, you know, it's been half a week and not much has changed really. And the truth is not much has changed. But Adam, you've picked out like all the players
yeah.
who have
yeah.
genuinely made an impression on me in the early going. And I didn't watch Nicasio's first starts, but I saw the highlights of it. And my gosh, he was hitting 98 with his fastball. And that slider was breaking, and it just looked amazing. And if his pitching coach wasn't Ray Searidge, I'd be a lot more skeptical. But the track record is just unbelievable with fixing power pitchers specifically. I think I have to go Nicasio, and I'm not sure it even matters if it's a Sparp situation or not. I think
yeah,
I'm
let's
go
take
Nicasio.
That out. Let's take that out of the equation. This, you know, half of this is also Julio Teheran, who I think is fine.
I mean,
fine.
It's not like I'm worried about him.
But I think this, you know, the strikeout potential is bigger with Nicasio, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
the potential is definitely better with Nicasio.
How could you not be worried about Julio Teheran though? Like, just not even from his first start, but just from last year. Aren't there signs?
Relative to what I paid for him, I'm not worried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was discounted so much on draft day. He was basically a number four when last year we were drafting him as a number two. So
yeah, I just don't see his floor as being that low. And like Scott said, for what you paid for him, you're not gonna lose value, but the potential to get a really great bargain from Teheran is I think pretty high.
Well, if you don't own Juan Nicasio, you can just wait for him to start again, and then you can play Juan Nicasio in FanDuel. It's time for you to play more fantasy baseball. Do that on FanDuel.com. Here's why FanDuel is great. First of all, it's fantasy baseball. What could be bad about it? Second, no season-long commitment, no sign-up fees. Contests start at $1, so you're not investing much time or money unless you want to. Also, there are contests out there for everybody. There's big tournaments with big payouts. There's smaller, safer double-ups. And it's fun. Trust me, you're going to love FanDuel. Special offer for new users. If you sign up today, enter your first league and either win a cash prize in that league or FanDuel will automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. So basically, you sign up for FanDuel, you play in a league up to $10, either you win some money or you get the refund from FanDuel and you get to play again. Go to FanDuel.com. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Sign up with our promo code. It's home run. One word, no spaces. HOMERUN. Home run. My baloney has a first name. It's HOMER. Little Simpsons reference for you. All right, a lot more on the show today. Let's get going. Dazzling Dodgers. You know, they've been hitting pretty well. Three Dodgers that I wanted to talk about. Adrian Gonzalez is 7-for-14 with three doubles. He hit two of them yesterday. Yasiel Puig, 8-for-15 with a home run and two triples in four games. And Buster Olney wrote a good piece on Puig about his mental approach, how his attitude is changing. I think that's really important for him. Maybe some people don't buy into that. For him, I do. Jock Peterson, 5-for-16 with a home run, three runs scored, one steal, but one walk, seven strikeouts, two doubles. Anything really jump out with Gonzalez, Puig, or Peterson?
Well, the one that jumps out the most is Peterson. Because of those seven strikeouts, that's something, even though the overall results for Peterson have been good so far, that's something that really worries me. Again, not a lot of plate appearances, but, you know, we've got the stats that we're given at this point, and I would certainly like to see maybe, you know, three fewer strikeouts would be nice. that's a, you know, almost half of his plate appearances. So that's not a good sign.
The one of the three who's really made an impression on me, because like you said, Al, the strikeouts continue for Peterson, so can we trust the rest of the results? I'm not there yet, but Puig, I don't know if Buster Olney included this in that same article or if I just heard him talking somewhere, but he had a good stat about how Puig performed on 1-2 counts last year.
Yes,
like basically when he falls behind, he was just a sitting duck. And already this year, he has like two triples and about as many walks as he had all of last year. And that counts. So just a lot more composed at the plate. And the physical tools are awesome. So if he's able to polish his game at all, I think Chris Towers is going to end up looking very right about him. And a lot of us are going to regret passing him up as late as round 7 or 8 when this is a guy we were taking in round 2 last year.
we play a lot of trivia games here in the office. We're doing research and find some statistical nuggets that are really cool. And so, you know, throw it out, you know, who has the statistical profile over the last 5 years, whatever. And so there was a question about Puig being, you know, sort of one of a very small number of hitters of a certain age with a really high OPS. I don't remember what the cutoffs were, but you know, we guessed a guess and nobody came up with Puig. And I just couldn't believe it was true. Went back and looked at his stats. And, you know, I forget that 2 years ago was a really good year for him, but it was really good in ways that I think didn't fully show up in fantasy because he hit doubles and triples. Mm-hmm. And,
but he didn't get to 20 homers.
So. Yeah.
It was a great points league season. It wasn't a good roto or category season. It wasn't a great roto category season because it was a lot of doubles and triples.
But, you look at just what he did in the totality of it. And I mean, it was really impressive. And that's just 2 years ago.
All right. We'll keep an eye on Yasiel Puig. So far, so good. And then I just want to bring up Adrian Gonzalez because over the last two seasons, he's had a really strong start each of the past two seasons. And I broke it down. You know, last year, Gonzalez had 5 home runs in his first 3 games. And also, he owns the Diamondbacks. So whenever he plays the Diamondbacks, he's probably going to do really well. But what he's done each of the last two seasons, Adrian Gonzalez, is hit 8 home runs in April and then 8 home runs in one other month. I think it was like September 1 year and maybe July the other year. And then been honestly pretty bad for most of the other, I guess, 8 months in those
six
two
months.
Seasons.
Well, other 4 months, I guess, if we were already counting 2 months.
Yeah, but there's 6 months in a season, right?
Right.
So
right.
8 months over 2 years.
I get you. Okay, yeah.
So like 4 really great months. And so what I'm saying
is... Like a word problem.
Yeah, can we make the statement that Adrian Gonzalez is a slow starter and or a fast starter and that you should sell high on him if he does it again this year?
Was he even starting fast? Because he doesn't have a home run yet.
7-for-14 with 4 walks and 3 doubles.
I know, but how's he going to get to 8?
Yeah, because he hasn't played the Diamondbacks yet. Give him time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's... A fair, I mean, it's like, you know, he could go 0-for-9 this weekend and suddenly it's not a hot start anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, but I think if he does have a really hot April, that would be a time to shop him. Yeah. I agree with that sentiment. It's just too early to say if he's going to get there.
Guys, who stood out to you in Thursday's games? Go.
I want to talk about Nathan Eovaldi. And it wasn't a line that you think would really stand out in any way. I mean, it wasn't really great. It certainly, you know, certainly wasn't great. I mean, Eovaldi gave up 5 runs, 5 innings. But, you know, there was enough there that was intriguing that it doesn't look like a total disaster either. He struck out 7 batters, didn't walk any. I found something pretty cool though, in looking up his stats on the MLB at Bat app, they've got, StatCast data now. And so for pitchers, they take, I think it's probably their most common pitch and, you know, break it down in terms of exit velocity and spin rate and all that kind of good stuff. I'm very excited now to have, you know, spin rate data on my phone.
That's pretty cool.
but the thing that really stuck out for me for Eovaldi is the average exit velocity on the 43 four seamers that he threw in this start was 97.4, and the major league average so far is 90 even. Mm. So that's not so good. And this is a guy who he was a breakout candidate for me because late last season he was really good at avoiding extra base hits. And in this game, gave up 4, including 2 home runs. So I don't really know what to make of that, but you know, it just seems like if that's something he can correct, that the rest of the performance seemed pretty good.
Well, Al, you and I were talking off the air about it. I think until you see Nathan Eovaldi change one thing, it's hard to buy into him, and that is he cannot pitch deep into games. His pitch count gets so high, and you know it's just weird. Also, he's a terrible, terrible whip guy. I mean, we're talking like 1.3s, so he cannot pitch deep into games. Until he starts doing that, you know, I'm not really that interested in Eovaldi.
Yeah, well, you know, and again, it's one start, but when somebody throws 65 strikes out of 94 pitches and doesn't walk anybody, that, you know, if he keep that up, he's going to start being a pretty good whip guy.
Yeah, but okay, yes, but 95 pitches in 5 innings.
Yeah, not good.
Right, not good. So anyway, standouts. Scott, give me a standout.
Well, I was kind of, while I was talking, thinking about who I could bring up. And, you know, so I looked through the notes and I saw the most two obvious to me you have in the very next, under the next heading here. So a little further down, you have Alex Wood, who did not have a very good start. 5 innings, 5 earned runs, 8 hits, 3 strikeouts. You know, pretty blah, pretty much what we got used to seeing from him in the last year, particularly after he joined the Dodgers. But one thing I noticed was the velocity on his pitches was not only up from last year when it took a little bit of a step back, but it was up higher than it's ever been before. He was up pretty much close to 92 on average for his fastball, when usually he's like a 90-mile-per-hour guy. And so it's... On the one hand, it's hard to get excited about it because what difference did it really make? You know, we've seen him have big strikeout games before, and this wasn't that. But velocity is, kind of an important variable when it comes to pitching success. And if he's able to improve on that from a year ago, then I think there's at least some chance that the overall results could improve too. My overall opinion of Wood is still he was kind of a gimmick in the early going and the league caught up to him, but he's somebody you need to monitor because I thought that would about Mike Fiers once upon a time, and then he became fantasy relevant again, and then maybe the league caught up to him again. But the point was he had a period where he had more than just the one period where he was a must-start fantasy option.
Alex Wood is 50% owned. All right, time to talk about Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yep.
Who threw 7 innings with 2 runs, 1 earned, no walks, 9 strikeouts, 8 hits against Minnesota. Another guy who got off to a great start last year. First 16 starts, Jimenez had a 2.96 ERA and a strikeout per inning. Last 16 starts, he had a 5.32 ERA. He's 37% owned. All right, Ubaldo Jimenez or Alex Wood, who would you guys rather own?
Alex Wood.
I agree. I mean, this is the kind of start that gets me excited the first time through. Oh, a guy struck out 9, and he didn't walk anybody. But I feel like we've seen this so much from Ubaldo Jimenez over the years, just this isolated, dominant start, that I need to see 2 or 3 of these in a row to really care.
I have a tape recording about Ubaldo Jimenez, so give me 1 sec. I'm going to get queued up. Jimenez is so inconsistent. He's teased us before. I just can't trust him, even after a great start like this.
But the only thing is, like, I won't be picking him up because I remember last year I was like, I'm finally bending. I'm going to pick up Ubaldo Jimenez, and then he was horrible. But I think he could actually go on like a month's run of being really good. I feel pretty certain that at the end of the year, the numbers are going to be terrible for Jimenez.
Yeah.
But he could carry your fantasy team or really help your fantasy team for a period of time. It won't be my team, but it could be someone else's.
I mean, if it really does go on for a month, and I do think it's possible, at some point you do have to pick him up just in case, you know? Even if you're not confident in it, I think a month in, you know, hypothetically, if he does keep this up, we'll have a much clearer idea of which players we originally drafted are droppable.
Yeah, well, that's
and
true.
at that point, Jimenez will be worth a flyer over one of those guys.
It's almost as if Jimenez checks the add drop list, and when he's rising on them, then he just intentionally tanks.
Jay Bruce homered twice yesterday, and Brian Price was talking about how he made some adjustments in spring and is hoping to get that batting average up. So
yeah,
we'll see.
The adjustments specifically were to hit the ball the other way more, because he seems like a guy who's really gotten burned by the increased use of infield shifts, and all of his hits prior to these two home runs were to left or center field. So you know, small sample, but looks like it's paying dividends.
And right, one of the home runs was off Brett Oberholzer, a lefty, so that's good to see. The first one was off of Charlie Morton, who just can't do anything against lefties, and that was pretty predictable.
Are you at all worried about John Lackey? Bad start yesterday.
No.
Okay. Are you interested in picking up Joey Rickard, who batted leadoff for the Orioles yesterday? He's 15% owned. He's 5-for-11 so far.
I'm definitely interested in picking up Rickard. I'm probably not yet in 12 team, but anything else, and I already have, in fact, picked him up in some other leagues. I'm not sure what to think about him power wise because we talked about Segura earlier and him historically having been a ground ball hitter. Rickard has historically been a fly ball hitter who hasn't really had much power. So you could, you know, if he gets off, continues with a hot start here with power, you know, you could kind of make the narrative, well, you know, he's developing into those, you know, fly ball tendencies and has the potential for real power. So I want to see how it plays out, but he's got enough other skills in terms of good plate discipline and the potential for steals that, you know, I think he's worth a flyer anyway.
I'm going to give you guys a list of players who have gotten off to slow starts. And you tell me if they are droppable. Let's get out the drop-o-meter on Delino DeShields, 64% owned. He's 0 for 9 with 3 walks, 5 strikeouts.
Drop-o-meter, I will go like a 3. I mean, if you drafted him in a points league, it's probably like a 10 because you're not really going to miss him if you drop him. But I think most people dropped him needing steals in Roto, and I still think he'll be fine for that.
Yeah, I agree with both of those both of those scores.
Also did not realize the Shields is a very good on base guy and 3 walks so far. He had a 344 on base with a 261 batting average.
And he's so fast that I think that he could really be a huge breakout for Steals to do a lot better than they did last year.
All right. Drop-o-meter on CJ Crone, 33%, 2 for 11 so far.
I'll go 8 on Crone because he's very fringy for me anyway.
Yeah. I mean, standard mixed league, I'd have no reservations about dropping him.
Avisaíl García, 25% owned. 2 for 15 with no extra base hits, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts so far. Avisaíl García.
10. I wrote a thing up on him yesterday looking at last season for him because I pegged him as a breakout going into last year, and there was absolutely no sign of any improvement there. So, yeah, I'm ready to get rid of him right now.
He did have a monster spring for what it's worth. I mean, I know it's a spring and it's kind of at some point you just have to forget it happened, but I'll go a little less than 10. I wasn't excited about him in the first place, but you know, I'm thinking the five outfielder league with deeper roster sizes, you know, unless there's still like a Rickard out there, I'm probably sticking with García.
But you would drop him for Joey Rickard.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, last guy here. Danny Valencia, 64% owned, 2 for 13, no extra base hits, but 3 walks, no strikeouts. Valencia, 2 for 13 so far, he's 64% owned. Drop-o-meter on Danny Valencia.
I'd like to say 0, because I do still really believe in the ability and what he showed last year. I'll go 3, which I think was what you were saying, Al.
Right. And pretty much the same thing. That I'm not nearly as high on Valencia as Scott is, but if you did draft him, you're probably drafting him based on what he did last season. So you need more than 3 or 4 days to let him prove that he can come close to that again.
And despite my efforts to hype him, he wasn't a popular draft target at all. So if you need a free roster spot with him not getting off to a good start, that's a way you can make it happen without necessarily sacrificing him.
And I just want to point out that they faced 3 lefties. The A's faced 3 lefties starting pitchers. And well, I mean, one was Sale, but he didn't even hit lefties. And even if Valencia reverts back to his old, you know, not so good form, he's still great against lefties. So probably means it's just a slump right now. And, don't overreact.
No, that's a good point.
Okay. So other pitchers who pitched yesterday, in addition to Jimenez, we had Phil Hughes, we had Alex Wood, Adam Conley, Tanner Roark, Derek Holland, Hector Santiago had a really good start and good velocity. Mike Fiers was bad. Nate Eovaldi, Matt Latos, 2 strikeouts, but 6 scoreless with only 1 hit, 1 walk. And Kendall Graveman. Anybody jump out as, you know, somebody you really want to own despite or supported by yesterday's numbers?
No, not a 1 from this group. Although I did find Phil Hughes' start mildly reassuring. I mean, it was an okay start, a quality start, you know, by definition, a minimum quality start. But against the Orioles in Baltimore, Phil Hughes being Phil Hughes, that's not a bad start at all.
You know, one guy who I'm not going to fall for based on this performance is Matt Latos. Mm-hmm. Despite one hitting the A's through 6 innings, average fastball velocity was 89. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's see. We'll jump around a little bit. I'll go through the news and notes, then we'll do two-star pitchers, and then we'll read your emails to end the show. Cincinnati sent Robert Stevenson back to AAA. San Diego signed James Loney. Yasmani Grandal and Howie Kendrick are expected back Tuesday. Be interesting to see what happens with Kendrick. So far, Chase Utley has been good and leading off. At least he let off yesterday. I'm not sure if he's let off every game. Darren O'Day got a save. Don't worry about it. Zach Britton pitched Monday and Wednesday. David Price and Corey Kluber will make their next starts in week two instead of on Sunday. So they are one-start pitchers in week
Boo.
One. Yeah, I know. That sucks. Carlos Correa missed a home run by a foot. So he is off his Hall of Fame trajectory. and Houston,
I heard about that. That's pretty bold. That was a pretty bold prediction, Adam.
I mean,
Hall of Fame before guys even had a full season.
This is what I said about Odell Beckham in his rookie year. I said, like, it's hard to predict anyone to go to the Hall of Fame, but if you're going to make me pick during his rookie year, if you're going to make me pick, I'm going to say that Odell Beckham is going to go to the Hall of Fame. He's a rare generational talent. And that's how I feel and how many people feel. I'm not taking credit for this one.
Fine. I just think it's kind of understating how hard it is to get in the Hall of Fame. Because basically we're hoping Carlos Correa is what Hanley Ramirez was for like the first 5 or 6 years of his career. And Hanley Ramirez ain't going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I'll give you another one. They gave out this stat yesterday on Correa. He's the youngest or the fastest to reach, I guess, does he have 25 home runs now in his career?
That sounds, he has three?
Yeah.
So far?
Yeah.
Yeah, 25, yeah.
So he's the fastest to reach 25 home runs. The third fastest, at shortstop. The third fastest was Alex Rodriguez, who, you know, Hall of Fame numbers, whatever. But the second was Nomar Garciaparra. So you never know how it's going to turn out. Nomar had a good career, but he ain't going to the Hall.
Yep.
All right, also, Houston needs more middle infielders. They signed Cuban shortstop Anibal Sierra to a one-year minor league deal. Atlanta's going to call up Yolish Chacin next week. Any interest?
No, I have a feeling John Gant's going to be the one sent down to make way for Chacin. And after watching him pitch his one relief inning, I wish they'd give him a shot instead as a starter.
I actually thought they were going to. So
yeah. It'll come eventually, but I'm intrigued about him in like an NL only sort of way. Cause you know, not a high end prospect, but just has an interesting delivery that I think could help his stuff play up.
Rusne Castillo may get sent to AAA to get regular playing time. Wei-Yin Chen not guaranteed to make his next start. He took that comebacker off his elbow, so keep an eye on Chen.
That is important because he would have been or would be potentially a two-start pitcher for next week.
Chris Owings again started in center field.
Yeah, it's not going to be a strict lefty-righty thing I was hearing on the broadcast. They just thought he matched up better with Lackey for whatever reason than Brito. But, you know, Brito's still going to be the main guy.
Owings will play his way out of it. Lonnie Chisenhall is going to begin a rehab assignment today. So, let's look at two start pitchers. Also, Luke Gregerson is the most added player in fantasy, and that makes sense. All right,
so fun, go ahead, Scott. Fun little note here. I don't know what you called exactly, but we are going to rank every two-star pitcher for the upcoming week on Fridays. Every single one of them. Just a ranking for you. So that's something you can consult when you're looking to add streamers off the waiver wire over the weekend or set your lineup, of course, Monday. We're going to take turns doing it. I'm going to take the first turn here this week. So we'll get a chance to talk through it here beforehand.
Cool.
That's something to look out for on the site.
Okay, starter sit David Price.
I'd start.
No, we'll go a little bit deeper than that.
Going on a limb there.
Okay, how about Michael Pineda at Toronto and home against Seattle?
I am probably not in Roto, but it's a much lower threshold for starting a two-star guy in a points league, which I don't think we discuss enough.
Yeah.
Because, you know, somebody has a 6 ERA and a start. Obviously, that's terrible in Roto, but if he goes 6 innings and, you know, strikes out 5 batters, that's still positive point production in a points league. It's still, you know, you take that really bad start with a pretty good start, and it's a good week overall, you know?
Well, yeah, Mike Fiers, 5 innings, 9 hits, 3 strikeouts, 5 earned runs. Okay, that's pretty bad. 2.5 fantasy points.
There you go. Yeah, even though Pineda wasn't great first time out and at Toronto's a bad matchup, I'd be okay starting him in points. I'd look to start him in points if I owned him.
How about Jeff Samardzija at Colorado and at the Dodgers?
Nope.
Yeah, I agree with that. Regardless of format.
All right.
And he's 78% started right now at CBS, so that means a lot of people, if they follow that advice, need to plug somebody else in.
Matt Moore. Matt Moore is getting Cleveland and the White Sox at home.
I'd do it. I think I'd do it in either one. He started out great with the strikeouts the first time out and then just kind of ran out of steam in the fourth inning, it seemed like. But overall, I had a positive impression of his first start.
Yeah, I like the two starts at home.
A step up in competition for Aaron Sanchez, the Yankees at home and the Red Sox on the road.
Yeah, I think this is one of the tougher decisions to make. I would lean yes, and I think I'd be leaning very hard yes in a head-to-head league.
Yeah, I mean, if you can slot him in that relief pitcher spot, it's anytime those guys are making two starts, you just got to cross your fingers and go with it.
There's a group of pitchers here. Fires, Kansas City and Detroit at home. Anibal Sanchez, Pittsburgh and at Houston. And Andrew Cashner at Philadelphia and home against Arizona. Would you stay away from any of those three? Fires, Anibal Sanchez, Andrew Cashner.
I mean, to be fair, like I think Sanchez in particular, I don't see any reason not to start him. But he's available in pretty much all my leagues where I was looking for two start options on waivers. And I passed him over. Just because there's one I like better was Chen, and now I need to revisit that. But there's another one way, way further down the ownership rate rankings that I like much better.
Who?
Shane Green.
Pittsburgh. Oh, yeah, I saw you picking him up everywhere.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, he's actually my favorite available two-star pitcher.
All right, then after that group, we have basically guys who are owned in 50% of leagues or less. Like Gallardo, 52% owned at Boston, at Texas. I would not have the guts to do it. I think those could be terrible.
That's exactly how I would put it for myself, too. I think there's reason as a two-star pitcher, Gallardo could be really good. I mean, he offers you nothing now as a one-star pitcher because he doesn't strike anybody out. And he doesn't go deep into games. So even in a points league, the innings aren't there in a one-start week. But he's been pretty good at avoiding the big hits, the extra base hits. And so I think in a two-start week, he could do just enough to help you.
Well, instead of me reading everything, is there anybody that you really want to highlight? Derek Holland at Seattle and Baltimore at home. That's interesting to me. What do you guys think?
Yeah, and he was okay yesterday. He didn't go the minimum for a quality start, but he was good enough that I could see him being useful in a two-start week. Probably I'd only consider it in a points league, picking up Holland. I think Al nailed it with Green, though. He definitely stands out as the streamer to pick up here. Brandon Finnegan coming off the good start against the Phillies, struck out 9. It was the Phillies, bad lineup, especially bad against left-handers. So, you know, I'm reserving judgment on Finnegan overall. But
look at the matchups.
Yeah. I mean, not great matchups, but I think if, like I was saying about Aaron Sanchez, Finnegan does have relief pitcher eligibility, and the possibility that either one of these starts is a quality start in a points league would make me absolutely pick him up and start him only in that format. Roto, I wouldn't risk it at all.
I guess what I'm saying is the matchups for Finnegan are the Cubs and the Cardinals, both on the road, and
yeah.
You know, the Cubs are
not
mashing.
Good.
But
right.
I think it's interesting that both Sanchez and Finnegan, Aaron Sanchez and Brandon Finnegan, you know, very good starts, but against the Rays and the Phillies, we get to see, you know, we'll have a much better idea of how to value them after Fantasy Week 2, assuming they make both of their starts.
Yes.
Anything else, guys, or shall we go to the emails?
One more, I think that's worth mentioning. I think one of the better options, that's Chris Medlin at Houston at Oakland.
I really was fairly impressed with Derek Holland. Yesterday, came apart a little bit toward the end there, but I'm considering putting him. Oh man, I got nobody to drop in this league, but I'm considering adding him for next week. All right, we'll see. See if I'm right. So, emails. Let's get to as many as we can. This is from Dave. Oh, by the way, DFS advice. Is there any pitcher that really stands out? I kind of like Taijuan Walker against Oakland. They can't hit anybody right now.
Yeah, no, I like Walker a lot. I admit I have not looked at the prices yet, so but I'm sure Walker's probably not so highly priced to not start.
St. Louis is playing Matt Whistler. That could be good for them. And Chris Tillman going up against Tampa Bay is interesting, maybe in a tournament play. Eric Hosmer has great numbers against Irvin Santana, 4-for-12 with two home runs and a double, four walks in 16 plate appearances. That's not bad. Anyway, Dave asks if Trey Turner is worth adding and stashing in a 16-team points league, and what are your expectations for Trey Turner once he comes up?
I like him even more in a 16-team categories league because I imagine there'll be a high number of steals there for a guy who will eventually be eligible at both middle infield spots. But there is I think he's a good enough hitter and with enough, at least extra base power that he could factor in points leagues as well. 12, I would say, no, not worth it. 16. Yeah, I think he's probably worth it. And I do think we'll see him sooner or later. I'm not sure Al agrees with me given Dusty Baker's track record with the kids. But I got the impression that Turner made a favorable enough impression on Baker this spring that he was legitimately in the running until he was out of the running.
Okay, let's go to our next email here. Tim in Oakland. He says, Dear Tony, Sonny, and Sam.
I cheated. I looked at the PS.
Yeah, those are Tony the Tiger, Sonny the Cuckoo Bird, and Toucan Sam.
Hmm.
Wait,
good call.
Sonny the Cuckoo Bird is what?
Cocoa Puffs.
And Toucan Sam is Fruit Loops?
Yes. Fruit Loops, yep.
Okay.
Did you watch TV as a kid?
I sure did.
Man, cereal commercials dominated the airwaves.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff back then. I rushed to add Juan Nicasio in my 10-team head-to-head league after the podcast confirmed my overhyped opinion of him. My best drop was Vincent Velasquez. Did I make a mistake dropping Velasquez for Nicasio? 10 teams.
I'd still take Velasquez over Nicasio now, but, you know, it seems like less of a mistake than it did 2 days ago.
Yeah,
I don't really like it. And it's about like the ad of Nicasio in a 10-teamer. There has to be somebody else. I think there's got to be a hitter I'd rather drop.
From King, Dear Jerry, George, and Kramer, do you think Jonathan Neese will be a top 40 pitcher by the end of the season under Ray Searidge?
That's Seinfeld. No, and no, I don't.
Thank you.
No. Top 40 no. For Neese, no.
Because I figure the best is probably his best year with the Mets, which I don't remember. I think it was maybe 2012. And it was okay, but not great. Not top 40.
I don't think anybody on the podcast has anything in common with any character on Seinfeld, except maybe me and Jerry. I am a little bit of a, what's the deal with, like, I am questioning things that don't need to be questioned quite frequently, but that's the only thing I can think of.
He's totally Kramer.
Okay. Josh from Los Angeles. Dear White, Naquin, and how do you pronounce that guy's name?
Goodell.
Goodell?
I think.
Godel.
I think you're right. Rookie Tylers.
They're all Tylers.
Yeah. Name Tyler making a comeback.
I need someone who can potentially score a lot of runs and steal a lot of bases. How would you rank these waiver wire options for runs and steals? Cesar Hernandez, Socrates Brito, Leonis Martin, Keon Broxton.
Martin, Hernandez, Brito, Broxton.
I was going to put Broxton ahead of Brito because of playing time, Has Broxton sat yet?
He has, I think twice already for Flores, Ramon Flores.
Yeah.
I know, don't like that.
All right, then I agree with your ranking.
From Matt in New Hampshire, someone just dropped Colin McHugh in my 12-team 5x5 Roto League. Should I use the number one waiver claim on him? He has Scherzer, Jose Fernandez, Hamels, Verlander, Joe Ross, Velasquez, and Jay Happ. Would you waste your number one waiver claim on Colin McHugh?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, he's good.
I guess I'm not sure.
You're not sure he's good?
I'm not sure he's good. It's probably that first start was nothing, but
I don't get bent out of shape about saving this waiver wire business.
Yeah, it's not even the number one claim.
Perfect player.
He's got a great rotation.
I'd take McHugh over Happ right now. I'd take McHugh over Joe Ross right now too, but Happ's the low guy on the totem pole. And I like Happ. He was on my Sleepers 2.0, but I think McKee's better.
All right, last email is from Jordan. And we got an email from Zach that is a great email. Zach, I'm going to save it in my inbox and use it next week. Jordan says, Dear Marty, Patrick, and Dominic. And I think those have got to be hockey goalies. Yeah. Brodeur,
yeah, I think you're right.
Wah, and Hasek. How about that, Canada? What's up now? All right. Anyway, deep 10-team league with 5 outfield spots and 3 utility players. The Miguel Sano owner has put him on the trade block, looking for an outfielder or a starting pitcher. What do you guys think of trying to buy low on Sano?
He wants an outfielder and he's trading Sano?
I guess he's DH. Oh. Maybe he doesn't even realize he's about to be outfield eligible.
Okay. No, I think it's a great idea. Buying low on Sano, sure. What would be buying low on Cano? That's
Sano.
That's the yeah. What was I saying? Cano?
You said Cano. Cano is on the brain for you.
No, yeah, that's true. Cano would not be buying low for Sano. That's fair to say.
I think he's saying looking for outfielder or starting pitcher. I would think Nicasio for Sano. I can't imagine anybody would go for that, but maybe they would.
I got a couple of names.
Based on
just where we drafted them, what about like a Dexter Fowler or an Adam Eaton or even a Gregory Polanco? Is that a little risky based on their starts to trade them for Sano?
I would do any of those three, trade any of those three for Sano right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's risky. I just think it wouldn't. Maybe I'm overestimating this guy's understanding of things. But
if it's a buy low, you know, I think that's a good starting point.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
What has to be them or lower? Nothing higher than guys you were taking in like the 10th round or later. Let's put it that way.
That sounds fair.
Okay. Everybody, thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. Scott and Al, thank you for dominating this podcast. And we'll talk to you on Monday. Al, not until Wednesday. But I assume you and I will talk before then, okay?
Yeah, let's do that.
Shoot me a text. I'm Adam Azer for Scott White and Al Melchior. Have a great weekend, as I said. Now an extra great weekend. See you later.
Extra one. Yeah.